Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend David Colby from the Central Presbyterian Church in St. Paul.
Thank you. Let us pray. Gracious and wonderful God, we continue to be amazed and surprised at the events of our lives. We trust, O God, that you've gathered us here today and that you intend good to come of our deliberations. We are an unlikely lot of people. We come from all parts of this state, and we come with many differences of opinion on priorities and political ideology. To be honest, we don't always get along well, nor do we always act in ways in which we can be proud of later. In short, we are a microcosm of your people. And so we come seeking wisdom. We desire a moral compass that will offer guidance in matters of weighty importance, but also on less lofty procedural maneuvers and affairs that are at best preliminary. Remind us of patterns of basic civility and kindness, even and especially toward those with whom we will disagree. Keep our ears and minds and hearts open to new ideas, old wisdom, and to tentative overtures. We ask for compassion for those here today who are struggling with illness and grief. We pray for members who are far from home, who miss their families on long days in session. We pray for all who are today cold, hungry, without decent housing, alone, anxious, or suffering in any way. Many of the actions taken today will have long-term consequences, and yet we know that life is fragile, and we are promised only today. May our lives and our work on this day be pleasing and beneficial for the common good. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep. Good job.
Thanks.
Do we give that one? Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Mois, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Bress, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file, herewith returned, Senate File 94, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file, herewith transmitted, House File Number 886, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay, the next order of business, first reading of House bills. Senator Pogemiller.
There's one on the, make sure you note it, gets its first reading on the agenda.
First reading of House bills. Senator.
President.
Senator Pogemiller.
I move to lay House File 886 on the table.
Okay. On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is reports of committees. There's two reports to be read.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which is referred Senate File Number 824, a bill for an act relating to the state budget exempting allocation of general fund balance at end of fiscal year 2009, reports the same back that with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File 55, a bill for an act relating to capital investment, correcting the grantee for a parks appropriation, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill do pass.
Senator Porgemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda and the two read by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There's two to be read, two additions to be read at the desk.
Senate file numbers 400, 594, 684, 824, and 55.
Second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a number of authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Remaining under motions, there's some authors' motions. Senator Murphy, Senator Latz, did you have a? Okay. Senator Vickerman, did you have a motion to be read, to make?
Mr. President, I would move that Senate File 429 be withdrawn from the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communication, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. It's my
Senator Vickerman, this is your bill.
Yes, Mr. President, my bill.
Okay, on the Vickerman motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Sharon, is she in the... Do you have a motion to make? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I move that Senate File 621 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education.
This is your bill, Senator?
Yes, it is.
All right. On the Senator Sharon motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Rest, do you have a motion to make?
Mr. President, I move that Senate File Number 616 be withdrawn from the Committee on Taxes and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. It's my bill, and it has the consent of both chairs.
Okay. On the Senator Rest motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Olson, do you have a motion to be made?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 857 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. This is my bill, and both the chairs are in agreement.
Okay, on the Olson motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 361 be withdrawn from the Committee on Higher Education and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. The chairs agree to this.
On Senator Latz's motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Remaining under motions, we'll go to introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They're printed on today's agenda. On page one, Senate File 924 will be sent to the Environment Committee. On page two, Senate File 935 to the Finance Committee. And on page 11, 1014 will be sent to the Transportation Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, on the order of business of motions and resolutions, I move we take up the Senate calendar.
On the motion, there's one bill on the calendar. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 166 its third reading.
Senate File 166, a bill for an act relating to insurance, regulating life insurance, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Before the roll, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was waiting for a discussion on the bill. Mr. President and Senator Scheid, this is your bill on STOLE.
Okay, let's listen up. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Scheid, I may want to remind the body that this did receive a little bit of discussion during our general orders proceedings earlier this week. And this is your bill to handle the stranger-originated life insurance policy regulations. And I did a little research on the bill. I've noticed that there's other states that have tried to address STOLE, but in a variety of different ways. Matter of fact, Senator Sparks had a different version on how to solve the STOLE issue on his bill, Senate File 767. Unfortunately, I've been told that did not receive a hearing, and I don't know if it was requested a hearing, but I know that it did not have one, and I was wondering why we wouldn't be able to, at least in committee, why that particular bill was not allowed to be part of the discussion when we're trying to solve this STOLE issue. Could you give me an answer of why?
Senator Scheid, let's listen up here. Senator Scheid.
Mr. President, thank you. And Senator Limmer, I believe that on your desk the other day was the map that I had handed out about what other states have done. And you're right, Senator Sparks did introduce a bill. It came in after the bill, of which I am the author, had passed out of both committees, I believe, out of Commerce, Consumer Protection, and also out of Judiciary. I believe that's correct, and Senator Sparks could correct me on that. That is an approach, and I haven't looked at it in detail really recently to tell you how it would differ from the bill that was introduced last year. I know that the bill I authored last year is considerably different this year. And it was an attempt to be a compromise. And actually, in the Judiciary Committee, we did a major compromise on the elements of what creates the presumption, the rebuttable presumption. And so I just think this is a really good way. It's not exactly like other states, and I don't know that any two states are exactly alike in how they're approaching this. But this does not ban life settlement agreements being sold within 5 years. It just if they are a stranger originated, where there was no insurable interest at the inception or the issuance of the policy.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, does the insurance industry, are they united behind this particular bill we're going to vote on? Are they in support of your bill?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. President, I think in here I also have some information as to who were the organizations, and I think I can get that for you. Some organizations have endorsed this. Let me tell you which. The American Council of Life Insurance, that's ACLI, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Farmers Union, Fraternal Congress, the Minnesota Fraternal Congress, Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council, that's probably the one that we're most familiar with, and they were a breakoff, if you will recall, from the Insurance Federation. So, and then the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. There are, I think, individual companies that may not have endorsed it. I'm sure that haven't endorsed it or may not support it, even if they're part of another association. But the majority of our life insurance industry, yes, does support this because they think it's important that life settlements continue to be a viable option for individuals, but to allow stranger-originated life insurance policies to be taken out for the very purpose of reselling, and knowing that you're going to do that when you take out that insurance policy, is really committing a fraud against the insurance company, because they do ask, you know, and this has already started to affect the rates that seniors pay now, and we want to stop that, because life insurance is a very important instrument for financial planning, for protecting one's loved ones, one family, or one's business partner in the event of your death. And it's important. They have, however, the insurable interest requires that they have an interest that you live longer rather than die sooner, which is the exact reverse of the stranger-originated life insurance. So hope you'll join what I think will be the majority of people in voting for the bill, Senator Limmer.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, that's never stopped me before. but the question is as I've looked at your version of the bill to solve this issue versus Senator Sparks, I've done a little research. Bills that are similar to Senator Sparks' version of solving this problem have been passed in other states. And so there's other states, and the very groups that support your bill are the very lobbying organizations that have supported versions of Senator Sparks' bill in other states. They too have been supportive. So the other side of the lobbying argument, they too represent insurance companies. They too want to stop the illegal transfer of this property that's owned by perhaps senior citizens that are needing this. They too want to stop that type of fraudulent activity. So simply voting against your bill does not mean that you're in favor of some purported fraud. It does mean, that there's a...
Let me try this again. Let's listen to the debate. It's just terrible this morning, and that's the third time I've had to announce that. So, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate your help on making sure we have a viable debate on the floor of the Senate. Senator Scheid, I was talking about how similar bills, closer to Senator Sparks' version of the bill, have been passed in other states, and that the insurance companies, the industry on the whole, seems to be in support of anything that will prevent STOLE and fraudulent activities. I don't think it's should be characterized on the idea that if you vote against this bill, somehow you're for fraud in STOLE. I know you didn't mean that, and I don't accept it. All I'm telling you is, or telling the body is that simply because you oppose your version, it's still all right to vote that way. You aren't going to be labeled as being someone in favor of fraud. It's just a different version to solve the very same issue. The question that I have is that I've been told that for over 100 years now in the state of Minnesota, that a life insurance policy is the property of those who take that insurance policy out. It's considered property. We had that discussion in judiciary as well. And the people who hold that or subscribe to that policy also have the right to sell that policy as well sometime in the future. We're defining what that time frame is before or on the very early years that they cannot do it. And I think trying to define it is a good thing. It prevents that illegal collusion between someone taking out the policy and perhaps an investor out there that's trying to grab it as early as possible. A 5-year plan, I think, is a little too far, a little too restrictive. I also have another issue on your bill, that there is a presumption, the rebuttable presumption, that any senior citizen who attempts to sell their insurance policy before that 5-year penalty or 5-year limit comes up has committed some type of illegal act. And that I know that we attempted to have this discussion earlier this week. And if you can give me some comfort on this, I might be able to support your bill. But nowhere in our criminal jurisprudence do we consider someone guilty before and having someone prove their innocence. And I'm afraid that's where we're going the way it's written.
Mr. President.
Aye.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer. To the thing you said where I was shaking my head wildly and waving my arms, you said, I believe, that if a senior citizen seeks to sell that policy within the five years, then there's a rebuttable presumption that it was a STOLE. No, Senator Limmer. Only if there is absolutely no restriction. If there was an insurable interest in the beginning, there is no restriction on selling that policy, other than probably the contestability period, the 2 years. If the person, this is when the presumption happens. If the person who's applying for life insurance undergoes that life expectancy evaluation, which really, as far as I can tell, is only done when it's intended from the outset that this policy will be sold. Some people say that's not so, but so we actually compromised here and said that they also then have to have had an agreement or an understanding that they'll sell that policy before it's issued. And they don't fund or don't have any, quote, skin in the game. They aren't helping to fund the premiums. Senator Limmer, most life insurance policies don't have that involvement. But if they do, and they're sold within 5 years.
All right. All right, continue on.
If they do have any of those elements, the life expectancy evaluation connected to either the agreement to sell it or they're not financing the premiums themselves, then there's the presumption. But Senator Limmer, not just selling the policy does not trigger the presumption.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Scheid, before I ask any more questions, I'm just surprised that there aren't more than two people in the room that are enthralled by our discussion today on STOLE. Nevertheless, when it comes to this presumption, the rebuttable presumption that you just described, who would have the burden of proof to prove whether or not there was a fraudulent act? Would it be the insurance company that's going to bring the accusation up, or would it be the burden of proof for the individual who subscribed and then sold this property? Who would have the burden of proof to prove? That's always how we kind of define the burden of proof, and I think that's key to whether or not this is an appropriate bill to have. So if you could tell me who has the burden of proof in the event someone raised a question about whether they made a fraudulent act, I would like to know.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President and Senator Limmer, I think we had a little bit of discussion in the Judiciary Committee, and you were part of that discussion. The elements that triggers a STOLE is similar to any element of that we as policymakers put forth that would trigger an allegation of a crime or an allegation of a wrongdoing. So the elements that have been spelled out in terms of the rebuttable presumption creates a triggering factor that presents a presence of those elements. So if a particular transaction triggers those factors, then it raises an allegation that something like that might have happened. You don't ever get to the burden of proof stage until there's actual litigation pending. But ultimately, the individual who's bringing forth the case have to make the case, the initial burden. They have to meet the initial burden. So if it's the insurance industry or if the family members of the individual who feels that the individual, so it raises the trigger. So somebody has to say, and that burden falls on the individual who's bringing forth the case to say, a STOLE transaction took place. Once that allegation is made, obviously, the the people who are involved in the Stolle transaction gets to come back and does have the burden to say that, no, this was not a Stolle transaction. But in terms of the initial burden to raise this to the level of a Stolle transaction, the plaintiff is the one who has to meet that burden. So if by asking about the burden of proof, if you're wondering whether or not we're unfairly placing a burden on somebody who has a presumed right to their life insurance policy, that somehow they have a heavier burden to prove that they're innocent, I don't think that we are actually imposing a higher burden on them. We're, in essence, actually imposing a higher burden on the individuals who are claiming that there's a Stolle transaction. Because even for this to become a case that will go forth in court, the people alleging that will have to prove sufficiently that a Stolle transaction did occur before that burden will shift. So I don't think that we're unduly placing burdens on people who hold life insurance policies who might want to enter the secondary market in these viatical settlements. I don't think that we're unduly burdening people by creating these triggering factors.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ma, I have a different opinion. I have a different read of this bill. With the provision of the rebuttable presumption, I believe that the burden of proof will fall on the premium holder. And nowhere else, I don't believe anywhere else in Minnesota law, that we have the presumption that you have to prove yourself innocent when there's a charge against you. That's up to the accuser. That's up to the individual, perhaps the insurance company that wants to do that. Even if there was a 5-year window, if they come up and say, we believe you made a fraudulent act, we're denying coverage as of this moment. They can do that. And then it's going to be up to the poor premium holder in order to prove the big insurance company wrong. Now, if this gets out of hand, I think it negatively affects the secondary market. And because of that, we could have, either we'll have insurance offerings go up in price because of what we do today, or the insurance offering will just disappear in the state of Minnesota because of these restrictions. It's a different read, a different way I interpret this particular bill before us, but I believe that this could have maybe been massaged a little bit further. And as a result, you even stated that it would be the burden of the individual taking the policy out, that would be their burden to prove otherwise. And I just can't accept that, at least in my vote.
All right. Senator Moi.
Well, Mr. President, members, you know, I think that we're all in agreement that what Senator Scheid's bill is trying to do is to regulate prohibited acts. We're all in agreement that what Stolle transactions are not transactions that we condone as a society. And I think what Senator Scheid's bill is trying to do is to permit us to regulate against these prohibited acts. And in that regulatory process, we create triggering mechanisms to help us measure when those fraudulent acts have taken place. So just like in any other work that we do around here, when we are trying to regulate certain prohibited acts, we create triggering mechanisms to signify where or when people have crossed over that line in that regulatory attempt. And so here I don't think that we are in any way infringing upon transactions that are taking place legally and within the confines of what is permissible. But here we're trying to identify elements to help us where we need to regulate these illegal acts. So let us not forget that the ends that we're trying to achieve by this regulatory measure is to prohibit and to regulate these bad acts that are taking place out in our community.
Secretary, we'll take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes, 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions, Senator Murphy, did you have a motion to read?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that Senate File 276 be withdrawn from the Committee on Higher Education and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, this is your bill, Senator.
Mr. President, and I talked to the Senator Pappas, Chair of the Higher Education Committee, and everything's copacetic.
Thank you. On Senator Murphy's motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now, Senator Pogerbiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move a recess for 15 minutes. The Majority Caucus will meet in the retiring room, Senator Senjum, 112.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, 112 for the Minority Caucus.
Okay.
The Republican Caucus. We are never in the minority.
So I move to the call of the chair, and we hope that's about 15 minutes.
On the motion to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
The sergeant at arms be instructed in bringing the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogerbiller.
Mr. President, remaining under the order of business of motions and resolutions, I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota.
First, we move it from the table.
Oh.
That's the first motion.
I move that House File 866 be taken from the table.
On the motion,
eight,
all those...
886
from the table. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now,
Mr. President, my fault, sorry. I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 886, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 886 its second and third reading and place it on its final passage.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
I'd yield to Senator
Second reading.
Cohn.
House File 886.
Second reading.
I'd yield to Senator Cohen.
Now before us, House File 886, Senator Cohn.
Mr. President, House File 886 is the bill necessitated by the federal stimulus language. If members have followed where we are relative to the acceptance of federal stimulus money, we have to pass this legislation, and members should be aware that I don't know exactly how many other states, but there are a number of other states that are passing similar legislation. The stimulus bill has language in it that indicates that a state, and I'm looking at the stimulus language, a state is not eligible for an increase in the FMAP if the increase is to be deposited or credited into any reserve or rainy day fund of the state. When you look at the rest of this biennium, we will have, with the acceptance of the FMAP money, a surplus. Under our state law, the surplus money then is credited to the budget reserve. So that's in direct contravention of this stimulus language. So what House File 886 does is to have the money carried forward into the general fund. That would then place our state law in compliance with the stimulus money, package, allow us to accept that money, the FMAP money, and not be contrary to federal law. Obviously, there's a significant amount of money at play in the absence of this legislation. As I mentioned, members, I'm not aware of what other states are making the same requirement. I do know there are other states in this situation. The other part of the bill is language that I think allows us to do what we ought to be doing responsibly in terms of the promulgation of the budget and to make sure that we have a balanced budget enacted both for this biennium, as required by the Constitution, and for the next biennium. I think a fear many of us have, and I can tell you I haven't been working with these numbers over these last number of weeks in significant detail. When you look at the economic outlook over the next 2 to 3 years, and you look at where we are in terms of the budget, if we don't come back with a budget that's in balance for the next biennium. We are simply passing on to the next legislature another very huge problem. And once into that kind of budgeting, this will go on indefinitely. So, members, that's what the bill is. And like I said, the stimulus package from the federal government has both pluses and minuses to it. And so the kind of requirements placed on us require us to reconfigure some of our statutes, and that's what this bill does. So I would ask for members' support.
Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I have no questions about the underlying bill that was first introduced, but it has been somewhat curious that we are going to put into statute the requirement that we balance the budget for the second biennium and not just the biennium that we're looking at for starting July 1st. Constitutionally, I know that the first requirement is that we balance the budget, and it's for the next biennium. And I personally have no problem with the requirement, but I find it curious that we would be doing that now when we are facing a very major economic crisis and that we don't know what's going to be happening in the future. And I'm wondering if it doesn't take away some of the options that we could look at for helping our state through this time. And I know that last session, we left here knowing that we were going to have almost $1 billion deficit going into the next biennium. So we absolutely know we could not do that again if we pass this bill today. And I know that, you know, the Senate passed bills last year. Many of us agreed with them. When the bills left the Senate floor last year, on the first round, we had a projected deficit for the next biennium of $764 million. After the bills left on the final round, our projected deficit was $946 million for this next biennium that starts July 1st. And now we'll be trying to put together a budget that would have to be balanced through 2014. I believe that's what we're looking at. It seems like a very big task right now, one that certainly is admirable, one that we should try and do. But I'm just wondering if the legislature is going to have the discipline to do that for 4 years out in a very challenging, unknown economic climate, and whether we should say this will be our policy but not put it in law. But if the chair of the Finance Committee says it can be done, I'm willing to go along with them.
Well, Mr.
Senator Cohn.
Mr. President, Senator Roebling, thanks for the vote of confidence. And I want to apologize to members of the Finance Committee because I did, in the committee, understate the bills that left the Senate floor last year. I should have been better prepared for the committee meeting this morning because Senator Roebling has stated the correct figure of 764. And I will tell you that in the discussions we had last year, whether within the Finance Committee, among Finance Chairman, among the full Senate, I was somebody who had always been pushing to get that to a much lower figure than what we ultimately did. And there's no question, Senator Roebling, you are correct in suggesting that this will put a fairly significant task upon the legislature and the governor to try to meet the language of Section 2 of the bill. But I do think it's interesting, and this isn't a comment directed toward the minority. This is a comment directed toward all of us. The rhetoric of politicians in this state and this country has been striking relative to budgetary issues. One of the things we heard during the last campaign, coming from all directions, both Democrat and Republican, were some of the problems that Washington had created in terms of not having any fiscal discipline on the part of both parties. And both candidates for president, Senator Obama and Senator McCain, talked at length during the campaign about how they would bring more fiscal discipline to the federal process. And now we have language that does exactly that for the state of Minnesota. And I think it's there's a certain degree of irony that people might object to it when this is exactly what all of us have been talking about over the years. And Senator Roebling, I think you're correct that this is not finger-pointing at the minority. This is finger-pointing at all of us. It's finger-pointing at me as chairman of the Finance Committee. This will impose a greater discipline on myself. I think I've been more disciplined than many members, but it makes sure that I apply this to myself. It applies to counterparts in the House. It applies to the governor. It applies to all politicians in the state. And I think this provides an effort for all of us to match up with our rhetoric. And Mr. President, would move a call to the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Cole.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings of the call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absentees.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Cohen. Further discussion? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Cohen, I appreciate your remarks. I think it's very different remarks than what were made when we had the budget debate at the conclusion of last session, when many of us were questioning the bill that your committee brought forth and asked this body to approve, which was ultimately adopted, that did, as Senator Roebling said, was adopted knowing that we'd be $1 billion short in this biennium. And there didn't seem to be that level of concern, Senator Cohen, as I recall our discussion about that bill last session. And I don't know what has changed in your committee since then and now, but I am curious that we have the obligation on the governor. I think that it's appropriate to have the obligation on the legislature. The constitutional obligations on the governor are clear. I'm not sure what purpose. I mean, generally, I don't disagree with the point that the governor should have proposed a budget that is balanced, but it seems as if in the legislature we've been pretty willing to ignore that kind of provision. And I'm just wondering, Senator Cohen, Mr. President, if what we did last year was a mistake. Did we adopt bills last year, the budget bills that we adopted, were those in error? And if so, should we acknowledge that here today? And maybe, Senator Cohen, if you could clarify whether or not you think the bills last year were a mistake.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Hand, I'd be delighted to clarify. A couple things. First of all, I can tell you that initial discussions that we had within the Senate, and I'm talking both public and private, would have had a significantly lower deficit for coming into this biennium. There were a couple things that I objected to, and I'm certainly chairman of the committee, but hopefully I don't run the committee by fiat, and there were some things that I wanted to have done otherwise that we did not do. I had proposed some larger cuts than ultimately were acceptable in the total Senate. But having said that, you've asked was what we did a mistake. And I should mention that when we went into conference, you know, the House had a much larger figure than we had. What's changed is last year, when we finished the session, there was a sense that there were problems. But nobody expected, at least I don't think anybody on the floor of the Senate expected, that we would have the credit markets collapse as took place in September, that we would have the significant economic displacement that's taking place throughout the state, throughout this country, and throughout this world. Certainly, if I had known in April, May, what we know today, I think the Senate bill off the floor of the Senate, and I think the bill out of conference would have looked significantly different than it looked back then. So I hopefully have some degree of intelligence, but I don't presume to be able to predict economics in the fashion of what happened. So I think I would have proposed something much differently to the Senate, knowing what we know today.
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, I have the A55 amendment. Is that appropriate at this time?
Yes, it is. The Secretary will report the Vanderveer A-55 amendment.
Senator Vanderveer moves to amend House File 886 as follows. Page 1, line 9, delete the period and insert. This is Amendment A-55.
Senator Vanderveer, discussion on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. The A-55 amendment allows a carried forward, but it doesn't. The funds carried forward to 2010 under this section must not be used to reverse or otherwise undo any of the state welfare reform measures passed pursuant to federal welfare reform in 1996. And I would ask for a roll call.
A roll call. Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, Senator Vanderveer, I'm trying to follow the language. What? You're suggesting going back to 1996, is that correct?
Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. President, Senator Cohen, we're learning that a lot of these funds have strings attached to them that require a certain behavior in the future on the part of the state and obligates the states to certain programs and spending. And what we want to make sure is that those programs and spending that we are obligating ourselves to do not undo the welfare reform under the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act. And so this amendment would do that. We cannot accept the funds if we are agreeing at that point that we will undo work in welfare and time limits, those issues. We want to keep those in place, and this amendment ensures that we do that.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I may or may not have some sympathy for Senator Vanderveer's amendment. My concern is that there's some urgency relative to passage of this bill because of the forecast on Tuesday. And I don't know all the ramifications of your amendment, Senator. I would have to ask, if your amendment goes on, that the bill be re-referred back to the Finance Committee and probably send it to Senator Berglund's division so that we can get a better sense of what's involved. I would strongly urge members to oppose this amendment because, again, maybe there's merit to it, but not without some significant study. And Senator Vanderveer, unless you're prepared to discuss at length on the Senate floor what this amendment means relative to fund balances, general or otherwise, engage in that discussion with Senator Berglund. I guess the uncertainty is such that I'm very reluctant to suggest we pass this.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just wanted to ask Senator Cohen if he was then assuring this body that the amendment that Senator Vanderveer has, Senator Vanderveer is saying he wants to make sure that this money doesn't affect these reforms. Are you assuring us that this money will not affect those reforms, and that's why we don't need to adopt the amendment? I just want to be clear on that you're telling us that this money that is coming in will have no effect on those reforms. Is that your assurance to us, Senator Cohen?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, Senator Hand, no, that's contrary to what I said, that I'm not sure what the language of Senator Vanderveer's amendment does, and until we have an absolute total understanding, I would be reluctant to accept the amendment. I'd be happy to have that discussion within the Finance Committee. I'm not sure where Senator Berglund is. I'm sure she would be happy to have that discussion within her division. But again, there's an urgency to this bill, and that's why it's in front of us. This is a bill initially requested by the governor, and to get into areas where we're not quite sure what the ramifications are, I'd have some hesitation.
And Mr. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Cohen, I guess if we all in agreement that we don't affect those reforms, I see no harm in the amendment. If you're saying that you're not sure by accepting the money what's strings are attached, then it raises some question in my mind of why we're adopting this bill. But if we all are in agreement that we do not want to affect the reforms that were put in place that respect to the welfare, then it seems to me we ought to adopt Senator Vanderveer's amendment unless there's a concern that maybe we shouldn't preserve those reforms. And so I'm not quite sure, Senator Cohen, what your objection is, unless it's that we are very uncertain about what we're doing when we adopt this in terms of the money we're going to get. Is that what you're suggesting?
Senator Cohen. Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll on the Vandiver amendment. Senate's under call. It's for you, Dick. Voting, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 20 ayes and 46 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move for a recess to the call of the chair, and we hope that's about 2:30. We have to wait for the higher ed group to finish their work, and so we're hoping about 2:30. So I would move to a recess to the call of the chair, and we would take up general orders. There are four or five bills there when we come back.
Senator Pogermiller, apparently we have to lay this bill on the table, the first motion. I'll get to you. You have to do that, Mickey?
Okay, Mr. President, I'd move to lay House File 886 on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please, members of the Higher Ed Committee, please go directly to room 200 in the State Office Building. The House members and the Regent candidates are waiting for us.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Airways, Railways, Waterways Subcommittee of Transportation will meet immediately upon the recess of the Senate.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Subcommittee on Waters will meet immediately in room 107.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Congress of Minnesota Resorts would ask you to stop at the Great Hall for their Great Resort Show till 3 today. Thank you.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I'd renew my motion, and hopefully it'll be about 2:30. We will be coming back today to process this and to do general orders.
On the motion to recess to 2:30, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands at recess.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Members, before we get going, there's a number of announcements that have to be made due to the weather. Members, we have a number of announcements that have to be made due to the weather, and I will recognize members for those announcements. Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we are going to cancel the Judiciary Committee meeting this afternoon. And for members of the public who are paying attention to that, we will reschedule the agenda that is set for today to Monday at the same time, 3 to 5:30 in room 15. So please adjust your schedule accordingly. Thank you.
Are there other announcements to be made at this time? Any other announcements?
Okay.
Senator Pogermiller.
And Mr. President, let's get back to where we were. And is the call, I would move a call of the Senate.
For the For procedurally, what you should do is take the bill off the table and then impose the call.
I would then move to that House File 886 be removed from the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller?
And then I'll yield to Senator Cohen. And Senator Cohen, you your call is no longer on, so if you want to do that, you need to.
Sir Cohen, did you want to impose a call again? Because the previous call is off.
Then, Mr. President, I'm not sure if probably the call is off, so we'd move call the Senate again.
The Senate's under call for the balance of proceedings of this bill. Sir Cohen.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings in the call be dispensed with and the Sergeant Arms be instructed to send
on
send
that
for
motion.
The
all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. President, we have House File 886 in front of us and would ask for member support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File, House File 886? Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend House File 886 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1. This is Amendment A51.
On the amendment, Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. What this amendment does is it says that any federal funds accepted cannot create an ongoing obligation for the state. In other words, any of these that require the state long change or spend money in an ongoing fashion, then we could not accept that money if it created an obligation for us to do so. And I would ask for a roll call on this, members.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, I ask members to reject the amendment. I understand, I think, what Senator Vandeveer is attempting to do. I don't necessarily disagree, but this money is one-time money anyways. So by its definition, it doesn't create an ongoing obligation. And Mr. President, I should add that I certainly have heard, not members of the Senate, but as individuals have testified before the budget divisions relative to budgets proposed for this year, there's been talk about we had this grant from such and such a place or a federal grant, and now we have to cover this grant with state money. And I have been lecturing everybody who's appeared in front of my divisions that they're to stop talking that way. And I think the message is getting out that simply because there's one-time money doesn't mean we're under any obligation to continue it. So I think the amendment is unnecessary language, and again, will complicate things in terms of getting this bill to the governor.
Senator Vandeveer?
Well, Mr. President and members, from what I've seen, some of this money does create ongoing liability for the state by the fact that it requires that we continue or not change or spend less in areas than we already are. And I think this is starting to look like a trap potentially, in that if we're going to authorize acceptance of this money, we would want to make sure that that didn't happen. Because the obligations created by taking this so-called free money from the federal government could result in us accepting something similar to an adjustable rate subprime mortgage, where it's going to end up costing us more than we get. So I think if it's not if it's not something that's going to happen anyway, there's no reason why we shouldn't put this assurance into the bill.
Is there further discussion on the A51 amendment,
Mr. President?
Senator Olson, G.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Vandeveer, was this introduced that it was a delete everything amendment? So it actually removes the portion that would be required, for the money received to be reflected in the forecast that the governor requested.
Senator Vandiver.
It is the delete everything, yes. So that the money accepted could not have contingencies or create any long-term liability for the state, any ongoing commitment. If they're just giving us the money, then we can take it.
Is there further discussion on the A51 amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. Senator's under call. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 18 ayes and 47 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File 886? Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to offer the A58 amendment, A58.
The Secretary will report the A58 amendment.
Senator Parasol moves to amend House File 886 as follows. Page 1 after line 9, insert. This is amendment A58.
On the amendment, Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. President. The language of A58 is quite short. Quote, none of these funds may be used to create or maintain a list of firearm owners in the state of Minnesota. I urge your support of it. And I'm asking for a roll call, Mr. President.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call vote. Is there a discussion on the A58 amendment? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in favor of this amendment and ask the body to support this amendment for reasons that, you know, we'd all be foolish if we didn't know, and the talk that's going on, that there's going to be, or there has been, a movement to control gun ownership in this country, not alone Minnesota, but the country in itself. And we in Minnesota take our hunting and our sports shooting and our self-protection very seriously. And I think by us sending a real strong message to Washington that we are not going to have any of this kind of talk in our state. We're going to support our hunting tradition, which incidentally creates billions of dollars worth of revenue to this state and has for the last years and will continue to do so. And we've got a bunch of folks in this state that are going to be watching real closely as to what's going to happen with the gun laws. So I ask for your support. I think this is a good amendment. Let's tell everybody that traditionally Minnesotans are hunters. And they're hunters and sporting shooters and self-protection, and we should not be having a list of ownership and law enforcement's not needed this in the past. And working many years with folks who dealt with guns, and it's not the good ownership of guns that we're talking about here. We should not be burdensing them with this. So I ask you to support this amendment. It's a straightforward amendment. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator Cohen.
I would ask for a ruling of the chair as to germaneness of this amendment. You know, the amendment deals with the federal stimulus monies. The bill deals with federal stimulus monies. It deals with how we handle the budget reserve. I'm not sure what it has to do with firearms or gun control or firearms list or anything of the sort.
Mr. President.
Senator Parasol.
Mr. President, this is a stimulus package message, isn't it? I mean, I think that's what we're discussing here all afternoon. This just says we cannot use it for that purpose. It's certainly not a federal mandate.
Okay.
Neither is it in the interest of Minnesotans to do so.
I think it's germane.
Further advice to the chair.
Use the money that
that's
we're
right.
get.
And
it's money that's carried forward.
That's right.
The bill itself is saying that the federal monies could not be used for an unrestricted general balance carried forward into fiscal year 2010. As I read the amendment, I think it is conceivable that these funds could be used for that purpose. So I will rule that the amendment is germane.
Well,
further discussion on the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Cohen.
On the amendment, then, I would ask that members vote no. If it's important to make sure no list of this sort is maintained, and obviously we can't impact on what the U.S. Congress wants to do or not do relative to the conditions they might place on monies they pass. But if we're concerned about this, it would be taken care of better in the regular finance process than in a bill like this. Otherwise, and I don't mean to be totally facetious, but you know, how about language that prohibits the collection of a list of coin collectors or other hobbyists or gun owners or boat owners or whatever? There'd be no end. If this is important, let's do it in the particular finance division that will consider stimulus monies appropriate to whatever this might be. That's where you do it. So members ought to vote no.
Further discussion on the A58 amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. All due respect to the senator, this is a very important issue, and this is a constitutional amendment we're talking about. We're not talking about coin collecting. I don't think that is part of the Constitution, and this amendment has been part of the discussion for a long time throughout the whole United States about the U.S. federal government eventually coming out and taking our weapons and disarming all of our country. And folks, I know for sure for a fact that that's going to be an uphill battle, but we just don't need anybody at all even thinking about it. And that has been out there, and it's a lot different than what you were talking about. I think it's very specific, and it's talking about the Second Amendment of our Constitution, so I certainly think that was not a real apples-to-apples comparison there. So, I ask for your support. Let's send the message to the gun owners in the state of Minnesota that we're not going to tolerate that. Not saying that you are, or that we're going to have to worry about it, but let's send a message before it even starts. Thanks.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. President. This will be my final comment. Not only is this inappropriate when there has been no particular purpose from the federal government for this money, all of it, that it's also unconscionable, and it's totally inappropriate for us to do the intrusive kinds of things that this list would be on our citizens.
Further discussion on the A58 amendment. Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll on the A58 amendment. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The secretary will close the roll. There being 30 ayes, 31 ayes, and 35 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. So further discussion on House File 886. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 886 its third reading.
House File 886, a bill for an act relating to the state budget exempting allocation of general fund balance at end of fiscal year 2009, etc.
So further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on final passage on House File 886. Have all senators voted who desire to vote? The Secretary will close the roll. There being 57 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed and its title is agreed to. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, remaining under motions, I move that the Senate now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
We need a motion from Senator Cohen.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I'd move that Senate File 824 be stricken and laid on the table. And
this is the Senate companion to the bill we just passed.
Yes. Sorry. Okay.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Members, we have three relatively simple bills on general orders. Why don't we process them? I move that... Committee do now resolve itself into the Senate do resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The committee is in order.
Mr. Chairman, members, number 5 on general orders, Senate File 2030, number 6 on general orders, Senate File 2261, and number 7, Senate File 496, I would yield to Senator Higgins.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 230 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 230 is a technical bill that updates the statute that regulates physician assistants. PAs are an increasingly important component of the healthcare system as we look at how to expand access to care in a cost-effective manner. Minnesota's PAs are providing care across the state, from community clinics in the inner city to emergency rooms and operating rooms in hospitals, to clinics in rural Minnesota that can't recruit a full-time physician but need a provider that can deliver primary care services. PAs are healthcare professionals who practice medicine only with physician supervision. As part of their comprehensive responsibilities, PAs conduct physical exams, diagnose and treat illnesses, order and interpret tests, counsel on preventive health care, assist in surgery, and write prescriptions. This bill updates the PA statute, but it does not expand the scope of practice, and it does not alter the nature of the physician-PA team practice. The PA statute has not been updated for years, and the statute now contains outdated provisions, and that makes it confusing and no longer practical in today's world. The bill has been vetted by every health organization that may have an interest, the Minnesota Medical Association, the Board of Medical Practice, the Department of Health. They've all reviewed the proposal. The PAs have been working with the Board of Medical Practice for 2 years on this proposal, and it reflects their input. I'm not aware of anybody who has a concern or is opposing the bill. I do want to highlight that the bill changes the current registration of PAs to licensure. Last year, I carried a bill dealing with emergency management and emergencies and disasters that we enacted into law. It was a model national bill brought by the Department of Health. Among other things, it provided protections to licensed healthcare practitioners that respond to a disaster or emergency. Since PAs aren't licensed, that bill did nothing to encourage PAs to respond and could conceivably not could not help if there were another hurricane like Katrina or another disaster. This year, Senator Marty is carrying the Minnesota Health Act, which seeks to provide health care to all Minnesotans. If we're going to do that in a cost-effective manner, we certainly need to use every PA. However, under Senator Marty's bill, PAs are not eligible to provide health care services to Minnesota patients because they're not licensed. I know that Senator Marty didn't mean to exclude them, and this proposal will address the issue. Finally, everyone here is familiar with the 35W bridge collapse. Even though PAs are healthcare professionals, and many of them are trauma specialists and practice in emergency rooms, they were prohibited under their current registration from responding to the bridge collapse and rushing to provide trauma care at the bridge site. Under the current statute, they would have first had to file a document with the Board of Medical Practice providing the name of the physician at the disaster site that would be supervising their work, before they could touch one person in the accident. This bill would allow PAs in the future to respond in a disaster and use their training and expertise to save our lives. On your desk is a packet that summarizes the bill, and I'd sure like your support. Thank you.
Is there discussion on Senate File 230? Discussion. Seeing none, Senator Higgins renews her motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 230 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The next item is number 6 on general orders, Senate File 261, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 261 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Latz.
This is the bill being brought forward by the Minnesota State Bar Association Real Property Section. It was non-controversial in committee, did not have any stated opposition. I will review its provisions for you. Article 1 deals with a couple of cleanup provisions from last year's amendments to the transfer on death deeds statutes. The first component of it would provide that the name and address of the grantee on a transfer of death deeds would not be required in order to register or record the initial deed. That information can be provided in another manner. The other provision in that article provides that in counties where a district court has a probate division, that the enforcement of a medical assistance lien or claim against real property described in the transfer on death deed would need to go through that probate division and not through the other portions of that court. Article 2 deals with common elements certificates. Presently, there are common elements of a condominium, for example, you're talking about hallways and entryways and stuff like that, that have certain laws that apply to them, but that does not cover planned communities. And as more and more planned communities are being built, this bill would take the current legal structure that applies to condominiums and apply them to the common elements in the planned communities as well. Article 3 contains a number of components. One component would provide that a certificate of real estate would not be required if a real estate transfer is basically a reorganization of ownership and not a transfer to an independent third party. So, for example, between sole owners, between a husband and a wife, between multiple co-owners, you would not need to go through the process of getting a certificate of real estate to memorialize that transfer. One section deals with the law governing cartway easements. This would be basically inaccessible parcels of land made inaccessible by the way some development is done or the way the land has been developed around this particular portion. It would apply. Right now there are laws which apply to how a county handles dealing with cartway easements. And this law would apply those same provisions to cities that are dealing with it so that the practices and procedures are uniform regardless of the local unit of government that is addressing the cartway easement. The final section would amend the power of attorney law to deal with cases where the principal is a corporation. Frankly, it's often very difficult to get the CEO or appropriate person from a corporation to actually sign off on the power of attorney. More typically, what would be more easily done is to have the power of attorney acknowledged in a representative capacity, just like other general affidavits are allowed to do. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I ask for your support.
There's a discussion on Senate File 261. Discussion. Seeing none, Senator Latch renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate File 261 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The third item on general orders today is number seven, number Senate File 496. Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 496 be recommended to pass.
On that motion, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota has recognized suicide as a leading cause of death and a serious public health concern when we funded a statewide suicide prevention plan 8 years ago. The purpose of my bill is to add language that would address a lifespan approach to suicide prevention. One of the things that I was surprised to find out in learning about this bill was of all age groups, people who are 75 to 84 years of age have the highest suicide rate. So we have to make sure that we're targeting this population, as well as college students as another population. So another thing this bill does is we have explicitly added representatives from the college system onto the list of stakeholders who are going to be designing a plan for suicide prevention across the state. This is a non-controversial bill. It makes a lot of sense, and especially during our difficult financial times, I think we need all the support systems as available out there for our fellow neighbors. So I recommend this bill to pass.
Is there discussion on Senate File 496? Seeing none, Senator Erickson Ropes renews her motion. When this committee to arise, Senate File 496 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. If Senator Pogamiller is within earshot, we have completed the general orders calendar for today. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the Committee of the Whole, as kept by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. I believe we're in announcements of Senate interest. Are there announcements of Senate interest? Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, this is not a formal committee meeting, but the budget chairs were going to meet, and we are going to meet in 118. The sooner everybody gets there, the sooner it'll be finished. I don't anticipate we'll spend a long time, but I need all the finance chairmen downstairs in 118.
Without objection, Senator Scheid will be excused from 12:15 to 12:45 p.m. Other announcements? Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to announce that the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee will meet immediately after session. And again, as soon as people get there and we get our work done, the sooner we can adjourn.
Other announcements of Senate interest? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to announce an event tomorrow morning is the Minnesota Family Impact Seminar. It's in the Revenue Building from 9 to 11 o'clock. The speaker is Tom Parrish, who will be talking about special education finance. I encourage any senators who are interested in that area to join us.
And without objection, Senator Kubley will be excused from today's session from 2:30 until 3 o'clock. Any other announcements? Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, members, I move that the Senate adjourn till Monday, March 2nd, 11 a.m.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned until March 2nd at 11 a.m.